You're listening to The Bulletin with UBS, first broadcast on the 8th of March 2015 on Monocle 24.
Hello and welcome to The Bulletin with UBS on Monocle 24. Each week we'll be hearing from the sharpest minds and freshest thinkers in the world of finance, taking you beyond the numbers and the hype and getting to the heart of the big issues of the day. This week we're considering what's next for China. With a recent cut in interest rates and the National People's Congress in session, we're taking a snapshot of the country's prospects. From growth targets and the property market to currency moves and government efforts to address the slowdown. We start by considering the impact of weak domestic demand and a property market in decline. What problems do these two issues pose? Min Lan Tan is head of the Asia-Pacific Investment Office at the CIO at UBS Wealth Management.
Indeed, GDP growth has slowed to 7.4% in 2014 from 7.7% in 2013. And if you look at the high-frequency data, which is M2 or exports or PMI, it suggests to us that economic momentum actually remains weak. And this year, you're likely to see further deceleration in growth to about 6.8%. Now, much of this weakness is really due to the ongoing correction in the physical property market. So month on month, property prices have actually dropped for about 9 months now, and we do think that prices will drop up to another 5% in 2015. So the key issue there is that property investment, which is a significant portion of growth, will continue to slide this year. I suppose the good news there is that if you look at prices in Tier 1 and Tier 2 city, it has more or less stabilized. But the inventory correction that's in the Tier 3 and Tier 4 regions, that correction is still ongoing.
Yonghao Pu is UBS Chief Investment Officer for North Asia and APAC. How does he characterize the problems in this area?
These both are structural and also cyclical. Now, why I say structural? Because obviously the leverage has increased dramatically in China. If you look at the total debt to GDP ratio, now is about close to the 250% over the GDP. That is already quite high. I mean, even in some degree, is close to the U.S. level. When you have such a high leverage level, the government should deleverage. But of course, when you deleverage, reduce the debt level, it will hurt growth. That's why the government are hesitating to do that.
Angus Grigg is China correspondent for the Australian Financial Review, based in Shanghai. Does he believe the recent rate cut hints at a loosening of monetary policy more generally?
I guess the first point to make is that while China cut interest rates over the weekend, it's not necessarily a loosening of monetary policy here. Indeed, it's quite the opposite. So while they're lowering interest rates officially, they're actually withdrawing money from the banking system, because what China's trying to do is really play this very difficult and awkward game of rebalancing the economy. So what you've seen on the one hand is them cutting interest rates, but this is really a response to trying to lower the cost for heavily indebted Chinese firms. On the other hand, they're actually withdrawing credit from the system to try and slowly deflate the credit bubble, which is built up over the last couple of years.
Tao Wang is the chief China economist at UBS.
I think right now the economy indeed is slowing down, driven by, I would call it, a structural downshift in the property sector, which hurts not only just construction, but also related commodities and machineries and heavy industry sector as well. So that's the key reason for a weak domestic demand and weak overall growth.
And this is the view of Dr. Enze Han, senior lecturer in the Department of Politics at SOAS in London. What are his key concerns?
Early this week, the Premier Li Keqiang delivered a government report about the economy. Essentially, the key point is that China's economic development has entered a new normal, which means basically that in the foreseeable future, the annual growth rate is going to be less than double digit debt China has experienced for the past two decades. So the target for next year is about 7%. And this emphasis is try to provide more sustainable development for China in the next round. And in the target, the goal is to avoid to get stuck in the medium income trap that many countries in this level of development sort of will be for a while. And then obviously also try to cut down emission domestically. So which means that sort of responding to some of the domestic concerns about the environment. China has changed from, let's say, the rapid growth, manufacturing type of export-oriented economy to one that aims to provide more stable, more sustainable, more equitable, perhaps, type of development model for the next round.
China's increasing problems with competitiveness are well documented, but with the strength of the US dollar, and as a result the yuan, the issue is being felt ever more keenly. So is this going to be addressed at the Congress and beyond? Here's Yonghao Pu again.
If you look at the last 10 years, let's say between 2004 to 2013, China's unit labor cost in the dollar term was up like 10% per year, while the US is more flattish. And even the Mexico, which is a major rival for China, only increased like 2 to 3 percentage points per year. Compared with China's growth rate was like 10% per year. And if you compare with Taiwan, the unit labor cost in dollar term even dropped. So I think this is obviously putting Chinese market become increasingly uncompetitive unless China can push up the more value-added industry like high-tech industry, more service industry, which may be able to mitigate this kind of competitive pressure.
What does Angus Grigg think policymakers would like to see?
In an ideal world, the Chinese policymakers would like to see a lower yuan in order to try and boost their export competitiveness. But the difficulty there is that China actually has borrowed quite a bit of money in US dollars, and particularly on sort of short-term rates. So there's a constant need to refinance credit here in China. And so the issue is a little bit that while they'd like lower currency to try and make their exports more competitive, they are worried that rapid depreciation of the yuan would put a lot of us Chinese firms in a very difficult position in terms of refinancing, and maybe even would see a sort of swag at default. So that's the sort of issues they're grappling with here.
Tao Wang, however, sees some positive signs from Chinese export growth.
The RMB has strengthened significantly against the other major currencies, and this has eroded some competitiveness. But nevertheless, Chinese exports are still growing, and we have seen some recovery in growth rate. And also given the weakness in domestic demand, of course, China's current account surplus continue to rise. In the near term, I'm not sure there's a clear plan to address this issue other than domestic reforms. In other words, I don't expect the government to allow for RMB to depreciate in any significant way.
And indeed, it is the need for reform that NZ Han focuses on too.
In order to graduate into more developed countries, in order to cut down pollution, meaning that much of the lower end, sort of the most polluting and the least value added sort of chain of production will probably have to go, right? And many actually have already gone out of China because of the increase of cost, right? I mean, Chinese labor cost has gone up quite a lot. So these days, perhaps you have to pay $600 a month for a worker. And you probably can do that with 200 in Vietnam. So obviously, many low-end companies have already moved out. But also interesting is in the government report by Premier Li Keqiang, he mentioned that there is a Made in China 2025 strategy, which aims to provide basically change China's image from a manufacturer of quantity to one of quality. So essentially, the idea is that the Chinese government is trying to promote perhaps more value-added kind of production and try to create more creative industries, perhaps, and more technology-driven growth rather than sort of cheap products from China.
In summary then, how problematic is this for China? Min Lan Tan.
It is an issue for China. I mean, if you look at the currency, in 2014, the Chinese RMB lost about 2.5% against the US dollar. But because of the very strong dollar, on a trade-weighted basis, the RMB is actually up over more than 10% just the past 6 months alone. And the upshot of that is that export growth has continued to be quite sluggish out of China. I have to say, though, actually, at the end of the day, the prime determinant of exports for China is still going to be the growth rates of key major trading partners, Europe in particular, and also the US. So our sense is that perhaps this year China's exports growth would be in the range of mid to high single digit, but because of the currency strength, it's very hard to see any acceleration beyond that.
Still to come on the Bulletin with UBS, we'll look at the steps the government might take to address these challenges, and we'll turn a spotlight onto the environment. So what steps might we see the government taking to try and avert a slowdown? Yonghao Pu explains.
To me, if government are willing to sacrifice more growth, which means they can have some room to address the structural issue, would be better. But it looks like the government has been able to sort of setting up a lower growth target at, let's say, 7. This is the lowest target in the last like one decade or one and a half decade. But to me, this target, let's say 7%, is still not low enough in order to solve or address those structural issues. So if government really want to address the structural issue, they have to lower growth even more.
What steps does Tao Wang think we might see the government taking?
We expect growth to slow to 6.8% this year and slowing further to 6.5% in 2016 as the property adjustments continue to have a negative impact. Over the next few years, next 5 years, we see average growth slowing probably towards 6% by end of the decade and averaging 6.5% in the next 5 years.
Min Lan Tan suggests that there has been little of surprise at the MPC so far when it comes to government strategy, although we might see more easing of monetary policy.
What's been emerging from the MPC so far has been largely in line with our expectations. So GDP growth target is now being lowered to 7% per annum. And as per our expectations, fiscal policy we think is going to play a bigger role. The deficit is expected to widen to about 2.3% of GDP from 1.8% last year. So infrastructure spending, especially on railways, low-cost housing, as well as water projects, we think is going to be the focus. And at the same time, the push towards reforms and the medium-term rebalancing of the Chinese economies continues. And I think the other thing that has emerged from the MPC is that monetary policy will likely ease further to prevent any further passive tightening as inflation rate falls. So between now to the end of the second quarter, we expect to see one more interest rate cut and one more triple R cut to come through.
Up next, we look at the environment and consider how this crucial issue is shaping the agenda. In recent weeks, an extraordinary film has gone viral in China. The theme of this unlikely smash? The environment. Chai Jing's film, Under the Dome, has prompted fierce debate and may perhaps have started to reframe the wider discussion on this issue. Given that, is the environment front and centre? What does NZ Han think the film's viral success means?
The environment has become one of the key points that people are talking about in China, but also I do believe that the timing of it, that Chai Jing was able to release the documentary and was actually featured quite prominently domestically, meaning that there are political forces behind it that really want to push forward. In fact, the documentary also got praised by the new Minister of Environment, right? So which means that it's not necessarily sort of an anti-system type of critic kind of documentary. It actually comes from within, right? So I think that is actually quite phenomenal.
The environment seems then undeniably a major factor, but will it continue to dominate the agenda? Angus Grigg is in little doubt.
Absolutely no doubt that the environment is the number one concern for most people here in China. You know, the environmental record of China is absolutely appalling, and not entirely to blame the Chinese. You know, it is also foreign companies exporting their pollution, if you like, or taking advantage of China's lax environmental standards. Having said that, the breakneck sort of pace of growth over the last decade has done untold damage to soil and water. But the main problem or the main concern for people is air pollution. So I guess you can sort of look at the Communist Party as, while they're unelected, they really do have to respond to people's needs or people's sort of wishes. And two ways they're really doing that is through the anti-corruption campaign, cracking down on government excess. And the second way they're doing that is through toughening up on the environment and sort of trying to take some really concrete steps to improve air pollution. And the most obvious sign of this is that in 2014, coal production and coal consumption in China actually fell for the first time in 14 years. So I guess you're in a situation where China is talking green and acting green, whereas probably over 5 years ago, they were sort of talking green but still acting brown.
Angus Grigg in Shanghai. Now with a closing thought from Singapore is Min Lan Tan with a longer-term view of China's prospects. particularly as they might affect advice to clients and investors. She suggests that it's all about the reform agenda and stresses that China is still a catch-up economy.
The reform agenda in China, it's essentially a process and not an event. So we do think that this process of a multi-year rebalancing is going to be ongoing. In the short term, the issue is that it could cause a drag on growth and it has an impact on the physical property market as well. But in the longer term, I think one does still needs to bear in mind that China is still a catch-up economy. Its per capita GDP income is still just about 12% of the U.S. Its per capital stock is still about 25% of South Korea. So in other words, if you take a 10-year view, if China is able to restructure its economy, actually the economic opportunities there remains tremendous.
That was Min Lan Tan, bringing us to the end of this 22nd edition of the Bulletin with UBS, setting the agenda in the fast-moving world of finance, every week here on Monocle 24. Listen again and find out more at monocle.com or catch up via iTunes or SoundCloud. The Bulletin with UBS on Monocle 24.